Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 119 for August 13th, 2012. I am Jamie Pauls.
I'm Lisa Salinger.
And unfortunately, I'm Buddy Brannon.
Well, greetings to both of you. Lisa, you are fresh from Serospective's Mountain Lion special. That seemed to go pretty well, I think. How did you feel it went?
I think it was great. We had lots of knowledgeable guests and plenty of activity in the chat room.
They had knowledgeable guests and they also had me.
That's right.
Yeah. Nah.
Listen to you.
But we had lots of questions in chat. People would ask a question and somebody else would pop up and answer it. Or it was kind of like the dual dialogues, but lots of good information, lots of people attending and talking Mountain Lion.
And it was good to hear from an old friend, Michael Loff, showed
Absolutely.
Up. Absolutely. Yeah, that was excellent. And Buddy, you're
a famous. Mm-hmm. We had all kinds of famous people. We even had David Woodbridge.
Yeah.
Right.
We had Liam. We had Liam Irvin. We had Buddy Brannon. And we had Michael Loth. And I keep thinking I'm forgetting someone, but I guess I'm not.
We had Lisa Salinger.
It's a great group.
She was Lisa.
Yeah.
Was there.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
She who
in
has installed
shadows.
Mountain Lion and hasn't really done
wait,
much
wait,
with
wait.
It
Did
yet.
Wait, did he say in the shadows?
I did.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Sorry.
So, in the news this week, if you're Apple, you got to be feeling a little cocky, because apparently there is a nice internal document from Samsung where the mobile boss, J.K. Shin, came in one day and said, look, folks, iPhone is light years ahead of us, and we need to fix this problem, so you guys go out and look at the iPhone, and we need to just copy it as much as we can, and you need to take good notes on what you find. And that's
well,
what they did, sort of.
Yeah, the 132 pages apparently went point by point. Now, I haven't read the 132-page document.
What's
I guess if I have a...
You?
I don't know. I haven't had any attacks of insomnia this week, but...
yeah, there you go.
But I haven't read it yet, but apparently it went through point by point and said and gave all the different features that the iPhone had that... We're basically eating Samsung's lunch. There's another article that I have that I'll make sure gets into the show notes that a lot of people are calling this document the smoking gun that proves that, yes, in fact, Samsung did steal its designs from the iPhone. But there's an alternative view that says, well, no, wait, not so fast. This was a document that doesn't say that. It basically says these are the things where they're ahead of us and that we need to look at. And it was a frank and fair comparison of where Samsung was then and what they needed improving on. Now, it's an interesting spin, but I'm kind of leaning more towards the smoking gun thing.
I mean, that's a great point because you obviously you're going to know what your competition's doing. You're going to look at it and you're going to figure out ways that you can improve. I mean, that's just going to be typical, I would think. It's probably, I'm guessing, the way they went about it and probably what is in that document that's really going to either make or break their argument here. Lisa, you have any particularly wise and wonderful thoughts here?
Not really, except that it seems like when these guys, these big names, end up in the limelight and end up in the spotlight, you kind of find, and I've heard this and I'm paraphrasing, but basically in this case, what has hit the fan has been pretty evenly distributed. For Samsung, it was this 132-page document. For Apple, at least at this point, it's passwords and security.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Apple and Amazon both.
And your local Pizza Hut, too.
This story that we're referring to, if you really want to hear the whole story, and man, is it ever it's like reading a good novel. Unfortunately, it really happened to a real person. Yeah.
And it's huge. It was literally like the big story for the first half of the week.
Yeah. So this real well-known tech writer, Matt Honan, He has a nice three-character Twitter name, at least did have anyway, Matt, yeah. M-A-T. So some hackers saw it and decided, hey, we'd kind of like to have that. We'd like to post to that. That'd be fun. So they went through this elaborate scheme where they went from his Twitter account, they found his website, managed to get an email address. They were so brazen as to call Amazon and say, hey, I've lost my password, or, well, they like added a credit card and then called back and said, hey, I've lost my email account. There's no way to unravel the whole story. Basically, it's not just a matter of brute force hacking a password. It's the term that was used was social engineering. So these guys actually would call tech support and use bits of information that they had, four digits of a credit card number, an email address. And even though they couldn't answer all the security questions,
they sort of circumvented that.
Exactly. Yeah. You know,
they had enough little pieces of this, little pieces of that, that they convinced the guy that answered the tech support phone at Apple and at Amazon that they were an authorized user of the account. And he said, all right, yeah, we can reset that for
you. Exactly. I mean, how many times has Pete Bosley said on Triple Click Home, the scariest thing that keeps him up at night is the human factor, not systems going down or brute forcing.
Absolutely. The technical stuff, that's easy.
Yeah.
There's a book, and I've mentioned it before here and on Triple Click probably and elsewhere, called The Art of Deception. It's by Kevin Mitnick. Kevin Mitnick was a fairly infamous computer hacker who got himself into a spot of trouble. And this book is all about the social engineering hack. And the bottom line is that the weakest link in any security plan is the human being. It's not the technology. It's not the it's the human being, because human beings can be compromised. If you flatter them right, or if you give the right sort of credentials, or if you know the right jargon, or if you you can say the right passphrases to the right people in the right situations, so on and so forth, you can get whatever you want. And the biggest hacking things that go on, the way that most of them are done, aren't through backdoors and they're not through compromised passwords and all this other thing. And it's important to have strong passwords and that sort of thing. But most of them are through human beings that have been compromised.
I read this book on Buddy's recommendation, and it was really excellent. And, you know, I feel so strongly about this article, probably more strongly than anything that I've been involved in covering. And at risk of using a term that's too strong, I would like to plead with you, if you are listening to us and you don't really think of yourself as particularly techie, I would really plead with you to not just let your eyes glaze over and hang out till the next story, because I really get it. I'm pretty much self-taught. You know, when I started learning computers, they were for the math and science geeks, and I wasn't one of those. And so I've really gone from, oh no, I'm no techie, to, well, I'm maybe not a techie, but I'm getting there. But this is one of those things, I promise you, that is worth your time and your effort to understand. Because there are going to be, in general, two kinds of people who hear this story. And the one kind is going to say, internet's not safe, blah, blah, blah. Never use my credit card, blah, blah, blah. Can't trust anybody, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? All that's going to do is make you worried and paranoid.
Right.
Then people will find a way to get your credit card information anyway,
yes,
offline.
I mean, you can have it in your pocket and somebody can walk by with a scanner, really. But that's not even that.
But when you go out to, here's my favorite example. When people talk about how insecure the internet is and how dangerous it is to shop online. Here's my favorite example. Everybody does this. When you go out to eat and you sit down at your table and you have your server come and you finished and they give you your bill and you put your credit card in the slip inside the little book and takes it away. That credit card then is out of your sight, out of your immediate control for as little as as many as 5 minutes. During that time, that credit card could be seen by at least three or four people and compromised by how many more?
Right.
And then they bring it back.
And then they bring it back. And you sign it. And you're none the wiser. And your credit card numbers and the security code and everything else could be in the hands of, 10 different people by then.
And what do most
it doesn't happen
do?
All the time.
Yeah. No.
But
what do most people do once they get this back? They sign it and they leave the server copy on the table where anybody really could pick it up. And I've gotten into the habit of saying, please come back for the receipt. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm being shown where to sign, I just say, would you please take that with you? But this isn't that. It sort of is, but this is, you don't have to understand computers to understand what happened. You have to understand people and inconsistencies in the whole process. And I really feel that you owe it to yourself to listen to this podcast. The relevant part is fairly long. I think the whole download is like an hour and a half. But it's a sad but fascinating story, but it's really something that taking the time to understand it and learn it could really change your life for the better, or at least keep it from changing for the worse.
And seriously, read The Art of Deception, because it really is written in English.
Mm. Yeah, I have a friend who she's considered a senior citizen, doesn't use computers and is phobic about them a bit. And I suggested she read this book, and she's like, wow, this is scary. This is real. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the hacks that he was doing, you didn't even have to use a computer. You just let your fingers do the walking. You just make a call. It's scary, but the only way for it not to be scary is for you to gain the knowledge and gain the power to be responsible as much as you can for your own stuff.
So to encourage people to listen, I think it would be worth just briefly saying what happened to the guy. And then I kind of have a takeaway line from the podcast that I think is worth stating. The man's Gmail account was deleted. His iCloud account was compromised and data was deleted. He was using the Find My Mac feature, which is similar to the Find My iPhone feature. So pictures of his daughter were wiped out. It appears that maybe that data is going to be recovered. But literally his whole life was turned upside down. I mean, his first clue was that his iPhone powered down. And he thought, oh, wow, a technical glitch. When he tried to log back in, he couldn't. And from that to calls to tech support to all of a sudden his Twitter account was being posted to without his knowledge. The man's life literally got turned upside down in the matter of just a few minutes, really.
And I thought, initially that he was targeted because he was a technical journalist.
Right.
He wasn't.
No.
He was targeted because of his Twitter name.
He just
that
had a cool Twitter
mind.
Name. Yeah.
Because when I first heard about this, I actually saw an article that he had written. That was the first I had read about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, oh, well, I mean, this is a shame to say, but I thought initially, oh, well, I'm sorry that happened to him, but that happened because he's a big name technical writer. Right. No, he's got a three-character Twitter. Jeez. Yeah.
And so the takeaway phrase is that convenience is the enemy of security. And we talk about this all the time because we do have to walk the tightrope. I mean, there are conveniences and we're all going to take advantage. I mean, I use iCloud. I love it. But be aware that if you choose to use one email address and one password for everything you do, you are just setting yourself up. If you get hacked, at least take some precautions. Maybe use an email address for only the really sensitive stuff. For heaven's sakes, think about other alternate passwords, that sort of thing. So there are some things we can do to at least make it more difficult. Kind of like you could leave your car unlocked and leave the keys in it in the parking lot. You stand a better chance of having it stolen than if you actually lock it and take the keys with you. If someone really wants it, they may take it anyway.
Now check this out. As far as secure passwords, this is an interesting tip that somebody gave me for how he creates his passwords, and I would have never thought of it on my own.
Yeah.
But people say, I can't remember these long, complicated passwords. So what this guy does is he thinks up a phrase and then translates it into grade 2 Braille and then makes that his password.
I love it. That's great. Yeah.
That hurts my brain, but it's great.
It is great. Well, we don't want to end on just the bad Apple news, which, by the way, Apple and Amazon and I would assume Google are all rethinking policies. And
Apple,
to be fair to them,
Apple's not allowing phone reset password resets anymore by humans, which in this case is probably a good thing until they can come up with a more secure policy. Right. I think the others are putting in some sort of two-step, two-factor
authentication.
Security verifications.
Right. So I think there must be a university class somewhere called Apple Sleuthing 101. I think there must be college credit for this. Because that seems to be what some people do, like, for a living. And the latest sleuthing assignment is to figure out whether we're going to have a longer iPhone or not, which I would suspect we probably will have when it's all said and done. But this next article talks about the fact that one of the things they might do with this longer screen is put a fifth row of icons on the screen rather than make the icons bigger. And this discovery was made by tweaking something called the iOS simulator. I've never even heard of such a thing, honestly. But apparently it exists. And there are people who are playing with it. And there's a proposed or rumored resolution change. Is that a rumor, or do we know that for a fact? The 640
by... We don't know anything for a fact.
Okay.
I mean, right. They're putting together random
They're taking
facts.
Little bits of information that they're gleaning from different parts of the operating system betas and saying, well, this looks like a pretty good... possibility. Well, they're taking that and leaked photos and leaked photos and possible prototypes and glomming that all together and saying, yeah, this looks like what probably might come out. Well,
that was sort of amusing to me on the whole. Because, I mean, if you have like scientific fact or you're building an argument for or against anything, you know, you do crap like that and they're going to laugh. But yet people do it on the iPhone. It's like... Let's take one thing from here and one thing from here, and wow, the numbers add up. It's the lottery. We won. It's weird. It's amusing in a sense. It's almost like, gosh, are you so desperate that you just can't wait or that you need to make a name for yourself? I don't know.
I love these articles that get posted from reputable magazines or news sites that say, we got this from a source who doesn't generally turn out to be very reliable. And this doesn't seem very plausible, but here's the information for you to consider.
Right.
Like, really?
Yeah. I mean, then what do they do after the thing launches? You know, just quietly delete it and go away.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these are interesting. I mean, most of these iPhone rumors, I read the headline and that's about it. But this one was really very interesting because it was like, wow, that took a certain creative kind of stupidity to come up with that.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, Apple's laughing all the way to the bank. I mean, it doesn't hurt them any.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It's free publicity.
All you want to.
Yeah.
I was going to say the next thing about the, where they're talking about why Apple needs a bigger screen and all this about the aspect ratio and everything like that. I totally, that was just like, okay, someone's, number one, okay, maybe this makes sense to somebody because it does make sense to me because like I don't use the screen anyway, but somebody's way overthinking this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It has to be 3D. That's the reason we're going to have a longer screen is because you can do more with 3D images. Whatever. I don't know. Anyway, probably around September 12th, we will know and we will find out. And then we will immediately begin speculating on what the next version of the iPhone/iPad will have to offer.
I would be perfectly happy if they didn't change the screen size. Because, you know, I feel like it's right now for me, okay, it's a nice size. It's not too big. It's not too small.
Right.
It's just right. But I kind of think they will change the screen size even a little bit because with the new iPad, there was more of an emphasis on the visual. I mean, for sighted people, there always is, but there was more of an emphasis on, you know, now you can do this and this is clearer. This is better. And really, I echo Ricky's sentiment from a couple weeks ago. Although I think she was talking about the dock, but in my case, it's the size. If it gets much bigger, if I'm going to upgrade to anything, I may just do the 4S because I don't want a mini tablet that is supposed to be a phone.
That's the other thing. I'm not sure how much bigger they'd actually make it. And if they make it any bigger, it's probably going to be like, well, we have to make it a little bigger to accommodate for a bigger battery, so we may as well do this other thing. But are they really going to make it that much bigger? And if they're not going to make it that, I mean, I don't know. What is it? Is a 3.5, 3.7 inch screen? They're talking about going to a 4-inch screen. Is like 0.3 inches that really that big of a deal?
Right.
No, in that case, no. But it's a matter of how much and how big, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are bigger phones, obviously, that people are getting used to. To me, wider would not be good as far as comfort level of holding the
thing. No, I think wider wouldn't be good. I think that it's just really the right width to hold in your hand.
Yeah. So longer kind of makes sense, but yeah. And who thought we would really care that much?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's really bizarre. I mean, you know, my dad had a business where he was on the road all the time. And so he got one of those bag phones way back when. And, you know, yeah, it was seriously huge. It was this bag and there was a battery in the bottom and the phone was came out of the bag with a cord and it was pretty bizarre looking. But then, you know, the phones got smaller and smaller until the one phone that he had, he said, look at this. And it was a little tiny flip phone. And I said, well, that's cute, but I can't find the magnet. And he said, what magnet? And if any of you guys remember those little, they were replicas of things. Like there was a laptop and there was a motorcycle and you pressed them and they did sounds. Okay. And I knew somebody who had a whole collection of these noisemakers on their fridge. And I thought that this phone was one of those magnets. I thought it was a toy. Yeah, nice. Seriously. So they got that small. And that was really hard though, actually, because I had talked to somebody for about 10 minutes on his phone. And I have small hands anyway. So I'm holding this phone and you had this death grip on this little tiny thing and like your hand would cramp. And it's like, you know what? This really is too small. Mm-hmm. But now they're going the other direction again. Be very interesting to see if in 10 years we're talking about the bag phone again. Oh, yeah. Please not. Let's not. But it's just very interesting. It's like they got smaller and then they got.
Yeah. Except that in 10 years, bigger. You know, that your bag phone will have a portable nuclear reactor to power it.
Right.
There you go.
And of course we'll be eating more data. And so to help us out with that, Verizon has like 5 more data plans than even are on their website in case you need just a little bit more. For example, 12 gigabytes for $110 a month, 14 for $120, 16 for $130, 18 for $140, and finally, $150 will get you 20 gigabytes a month. So, you know, just in case.
I guess that's okay if you've got 4 or 5 devices to share that with, but.
Yeah.
But, well,
like
I don't know. My whole deal is like.
That would be a good plan for them.
There you go. But yeah. I'm wondering why, you know, I get the whole keeping the complexity down so it's not on their website, but it just sounds like a good way to for them to try to appease customers that might decide they're going to go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, we can give you the secret plan that we don't show anywhere and that's not advertised anywhere, but we can give it to you because we'd like to keep you as a loyal Verizon customer.
Right.
Yeah, you hear the very shady salesperson going, psst, over here, come here. Yeah, this is a secret.
Hey, bud,
we like
come
you
here.
Special.
Come
exactly.
Here.
We're going to give this to you.
Don't tell anybody.
Closer.
Though.
Yeah, don't tell anybody. Exactly. What do they do but post it on Facebook for 200 of their closest friends?
Right. So we start out the podcast talking about security and the dangers of, just sharing so much information. And now we come to this story about Starbucks, which wants to take Square digital payments, rather, into the mainstream.
And I like Square.
You know, I haven't played with that. I haven't used it.
Okay. I haven't really used it a lot, but I like the concept.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I kind of took away from this is apparently if this is on your phone, if you walk into a Starbucks, the store is going to know that your phone has Square on it, and like your picture will pop up on a screen for the teller to see.
For identification.
Right, for identification purposes. So you just transfer money without even having to take the phone out of your pocket.
And you know, simple. I'm sure that this probably has security concerns of its own, but you just said something that says why I really like this idea.
Okay.
When you said, without having to take your phone out of your pocket.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I suppose people could hack that phone that you haven't taken out of your pocket. But I'm thinking, you know, how many problems could there be just because you've given up your phone? For example, if you're doing Starbucks drive-through, whether you're the driver or the passenger, and let's say, you know, you hand over your phone so they can take the payment, and they fumble it, and they drop it on the concrete, and it breaks.
Ooh, I didn't even think of that.
Me either.
Whose fault is that? You know, who is liable? Or if they take it you know, oh, we're having a technical difficulty. Let me take it over to another machine. Your phone, you know, with all your info on it, is out of your hands. So to me, you know, or even like as blind people, if you have to touch a certain something to a certain sensor to get the pay to work, but that's not, you can't know where that is, so somebody has to do it for you. It's the same old giving over access or having the phone be dropped. You know, it happens.
That's a great thought.
It's, you know, when you're naturally paranoid, this stuff comes to mind, I guess. Well, I mean, I've seen too much of it, I guess. Not so much security, but, you know, like people dropping their phones or having other problems with them. And at least this aspect of it, I really applaud them because the phone is there and it's doing its job, but it does not have to pass from hand to hand. I mean, it's kind of like if you have your wallet and you have money in there and credit cards and social security card, you know, if somebody wants to see ID, you don't, well, if you're wise, you don't hand them your wallet. You open it up and you hold it out so they can see it.
Right.
And to me, this whole thing about the phone would just be like handing your wallet. So I'm glad that that's not the case in this case.
Good point. And I mean that, so it's in your control, it's in your possession. So at least, I mean, you know what information's on that phone. We've already talked about the fact that if someone really is out to hack you, I mean, there's simple, easy ways to do it. So we shouldn't run screaming away from this new technology. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So if someone listening has played with this, has had a chance to use it, let us know your thoughts. I'm not even sure if it's really out yet. It may be.
I don't think it's out yet, but it's coming. Now, Square's other deal, which again is really exciting, and it's what really launched them, was that individuals can take credit card payments through Square. They can swipe somebody's card, or they can take payments through Square. So, like if you're selling your own CD, or if you do some craft or have some business or what have you, anybody can take credit card payments. They've sort of democratized the whole thing. And I mean, that's pretty exciting. So, I mean, like I think Square's a company to watch.
Very good. Well, Microsoft's another company to watch, and we shall most definitely. This next story talks about replacing the old add-ins that were in Microsoft Office with web apps. And the way
everybody's doing apps of some kind, app here, an app there, an app for this, an app for that. You know, everything's being called an app.
Right.
But that's about as much of that as I understood. So
I guess anyway. It's centrally stored, centrally located. So you point to an app on the web. I'm just wondering if this makes your computer a little less sluggish. You know, will it make the computer run a little faster? Because we know that sometimes add-ins can slow things down, and I don't know.
I don't feel like it's a change. I mean, it's somewhat of a change, but I feel like it's more a rebranding.
Oh, okay.
Because everybody knows what an app is. You know, if you ask somebody what's an app, they're going to be able to tell you, the average person. If you ask them what an add-in is, they're going to say, oh, well, I think that's like when I get granola on my frozen yogurt. That's an add-in, you know? I don't think they know. And so, I mean, of course, there are some differences because it's going to run more from the web.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like more than anything, this is a rebranding.
It's a good point, and it very well could be true. That will be another one of those. Now, Microsoft Office 13 is coming out. When do we know? If we don't,
early part of next year, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. I think after Windows 8 release.
Gotcha.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, like, I think that the beta, preview just went out to people about 3 weeks ago. Didn't we get the notice about
something
that?
Something like that, yeah.
About three weeks ago.
Okay. So we will definitely be watching for the release of the preview of Office or 2013. And when it comes out, we will all, I'm sure, have a play with it and be able to talk about it in much greater detail. Another thing that a lot of blind people are playing with, and I have not yet, and Buddy or Lisa, I'm going to be interested if you guys or either one of you have, and that is TuneIn Radio.
I've played with TuneIn Radio a little bit.
Okay.
Not inside of a Tesla, but I've played with it.
Right. So do you use it on your PC or on your smartphone?
On the iPhone.
Okay. Yeah. Because I know it's available. Well, 200 different platforms, apparently. This radio service that lets you listen to 70,000 stations.
I'm wondering how they come up with the number 200.
200 platforms. That has to be every little gadget known
exactly
to mankind.
Like they don't just like they don't mean Android. They mean like the HTC Thunderbolt and the Motorola Droid and the So they're counting each. I they got to be counting like each phone and each streaming device and each really.
So 70,000 stations and 2 million on-demand programs. That I definitely intend to play with TuneIn because I've heard a lot of good things about it. But now, if you buy this Tesla sedan, you can some of these models are 3G connected, and you can have internet radio in your car. This doesn't really surprise me. I mean, this was bound to happen.
No, this was coming.
Yeah,
the internet radio in your car was coming. There was no question.
Well, and some cars already have the satellite radio. You
know? Yeah, it's so past. That's so last century.
yes.
but as far as the TuneIn radio, yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, it'll not only search by station or by genre, but you can actually search for a particular program, and it will tell you what stations that program is playing on right now, and tune you right into that.
So how is it different from uTunes?
Well, uTunes, you can't.
Thing.
Well, uTunes doesn't search by program, though. It'll search by pretty much everything else.
Okay.
But let's say you want to tune in. Oh, I don't know. Like, pick your favorite political talk show idiot.
so either Glenn Beck I don't know, Alan Holmes or
political. Isn't political talk show idiot just a little bit redundant?
It is. Mm-hmm. It absolutely is.
You're more of a grammarian than that, buddy.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
That's a fair point. But anyway, you just type in the name of the show and it'll come up and it'll tell you it's on right now on thus and such a station.
Yeah.
See, I guess this is a little inconsistent of me because, you know, I really like the fact that you can access all kinds of things with technology. But for me, I don't have TuneIn Radio. I feel like, I mean, I have a couple radio apps, and I feel like I'm kind of radioed to death.
A lot of the content is the same from one to another.
Yeah,
it is. It's like, do we really need more? And in one sense, the on-demand is nice. I mean, we do this podcast, and it's on-demand. But in some senses, I think, you know, what are we losing? If we can have everything everywhere... And I know this is a stretch. I now feel like the longer iPhone screen people. But, you know, if we have everything everywhere, how is that going to affect our ability to delay gratification, to wait for things that we want?
Or
just to be able to anticipate what we want. I mean, there's hardly any anticipation now.
Yeah.
Because you have it all and you have it everywhere.
With no compromises.
And in some cases, yes. And in some cases, that's really great. But I just wonder how much of that are we going to have and in how many arenas before it backfires? I mean, things like accessibility. I mean, we say, you know, we're the accessibility anywhere people. Accessibility should be anywhere, everywhere, because that's not a luxury. That's a necessity. That's what we need to be productive. I just wonder, in general, you know, where do we draw the line?
Powerful, profound question that you, our listeners, can answer for us. Write us at resources@saratalk.com or leave an iReport on your Android or iOS device with iBlink Radio.
And if you fell asleep during it, be kind, please.
There you go. Yes. Keep the negative comments. Actually, just don't leave any negative comments. Just only positive.
We like those
please.
Too because we grow, but
that
still,
is true. You know. Absolutely true. Totally joking there. But what I'm not joking about is that the Google self-driving car really apparently is slowly but surely making its way to a highway near you. That's a little bit
especially
of an overstatement.
Especially if you live in Nevada.
If you live in Nevada, my father-in-law actually they drove to Alaska in a motorhome and are, well, almost home now, but they called us from Nevada. I'll have to ask him if he saw any driverless cars. Actually,
well,
I don't know that
you
see them. I guess
you would.
Someone in them.
Well, they do. They have, well, Google has mandated, at least in their cars, that they have two people in them. But now they're confident enough that they can only have one person in them. But the Nevada, the self-driving cars, have a special license plate. It's like a different color. I think it's like green or something for the self-driving cars. And the regular license plates are a different color.
And it's not like there's a ton of them. There's about a dozen of them right now that have logged about 300,000 miles between them. Some of this has been on Google's secret race course. We don't really know how much mileage has been on that.
When you said about the license plate, it really made me think, and I'm surprised I hadn't thought of this before, but all other things being equal, like let's say you didn't have this special license plate, if you had in a parking lot a Google self-driving car and some other car, I wonder visually if there's a way to differentiate Google. I mean, is there like a
it's got a flying saucer on the top of it or something.
Or like I said, like a self-driving car shade of blue, like a specific color or a specific something, maybe like a sensor panel.
There are sensor things on the roof and different places.
So I wonder if that would be very, I mean, there'd have to be, but I just wonder how visually noticeable those things are.
Can you imagine?
It'd be interesting to find out.
They're probably lower profile than some ham radio antennas.
Yeah. So they get this technology such that it's not visible. You know, they can embed the sensors into the car and so on and so forth. So some person's looking for their vehicle, and as occasionally happens, they get in the wrong one, and they sit down, and they hear this voice that says, "I'm sorry, sir, I don't recognize you," and then they have a heart attack because, you know, they are in this, or it starts moving without them. Destination.
And how would they recognize?
Yeah.
Well,
you
see,
know, like,
well. What,
I'm
no,
sorry,
what they,
I do
what
not.
Would,
I do not recognize that posterior print at this time.
Right. Well, no. What they what's probably going to end up happening is that, you know, when you're ready to leave somewhere, you'll like take out your cell phone and you'll call your car and it'll come to the front door and get you.
Oh, nice.
Oh, sweet. Like rainy day. I'm all over that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Of course, when you've got three or four of them lined up there, you know, how do you know which one's yours?
Yeah, I know which one's which, yeah. Mm.
If it runs you over, it belongs to you. Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, they still have to learn how to deal with road construction, and they still have to learn how to deal
with
inclement weather. Yeah,
yes.
Stay away from the Midwest or the East Coast.
Yes.
Yeah.
But barring those unforeseen things, apparently... all the accidents that have happened in the Google self-driving cars were when the self-driving cars were being driven by humans.
I love that one piece of information. My favorite in the whole article right there.
Now here's the thing about all that. You know, people are saying, you know, I don't know if I'd trust a computer to drive my car, you know, because I'm a human being and I have to be in control. And human beings have judgment where computers only have calculations. Well, computers also won't be texting while they're driving and slapping the kids while they're driving and eating a hamburger and all those other things. And did I mention slapping the kids?
Yes.
Good point. But what happens if it needs to reboot in the middle of four lane, you know, major highway?
Or you're a blind person and your speech
it runs on Linux.
You lose speech.
It runs on Linux.
It's like, I don't know where I am and I don't know how fast I'm going and I don't know what's in front of me or to the side of me at the moment. But in about 15 or 20 seconds, when it's reboots, I will.
That's where the NFB blind driver technology takes over, is so you can pull yourself over to the side of the road.
Gotcha. Okay. We got this working then. All right.
See, that's interesting because I didn't realize, you know, granted, you can only read so much of the stuff before your eyes glaze over.
Mm.
But I didn't realize that the blind driver technology was separate from the whole Google self-driving car.
Oh, yes.
Concept.
Oh, yes.
It is.
I did not realize that.
Yep.
Because, I don't know, I feel like, you know, I really, okay, I wouldn't mind driving one of these things around a racetrack or whatever. Right. But I have no desire to operate something like this on a day-in, day-out basis. I wouldn't mind, you know, riding with someone. I don't care. But to me, it's just like, oh, I don't know. You know, I'm a little hesitant. And so, you know, you read so much, and after a while, again, the eyes glaze.
Well, that first trip alone would certainly be a nail biter. I'm thinking, no matter how much training you had gotten and how many hours you had ridden with someone else, the first time you get into this thing alone and you are operating this vehicle, I would think that would be a little
Well,
a little intimidating.
I worry about the variabilities, I guess. Like, you know, what happens when there's black ice?
Yeah.
Those would have to be some pretty quick calculations. Or what if the traffic by all computer calculations looks normal, and then all of a sudden someone, you know, comes flying up out of the blue and cuts you off?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously I'm into the whole computer thing. I'm just a little skeptical that there are more variations than the computer can control for.
Well we've also got another 10 years or so before they're ready.
Yeah.
And things have a lot of room to improve, sure. But I'm actually really more confident in a computer making those kind of quick decisions and acting quickly with, you know, than I am in human reflexes doing the same, especially when you're talking about older drivers whose reflexes are slowing.
I kind of feel like I'd rather not have a mix on the roads, and I think it'll get to this point at some point. But, you know, I think if there are going to be self-driving cars, then all the cars on the road should be self-driving. Because really, they could talk to and network with one another in such a way that accidents would go down.
That's probably going to be another 20 years out, I suspect. If the introduction of the thing is going to be another 10 years, I'd say another 10 before everybody or virtually everybody is in them.
I just really feel, again, I'm playing the broken record again, back to the beginning of the podcast. I just really feel like the biggest threat to safety in this particular case is where people and computers kind of collide. I think if all the computers and the self-driving cars were left to do their own thing and network and talk with one another, well, this one slows down because that one's faster, and this is, you know, I think that could really be amazing. Our mortality rates could go down significantly. But like I said, my biggest concern is that transition time where you've got people trying to outthink computers and computers trying to outthink people.
Well, coming up after the break, news from the world of assistive technology right here on the Serotalk podcast.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Serotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back to Serotalk, and I'm Buddy Brannon. And getting back into a transportation vein, until we get the driverless cars and the blind drivable technology that we're probably not going to see for another 10 years or more, we still have to get where we're going, and that sometimes means taking a cab. Here we have a story about how Boston is, and Boston and San Francisco and New York and some other places are starting to handle some of that, making it a little easier for us blind folks to independently take the cab and not get ripped off by the cab driver who might tell us that the meter says one thing when it says something very different. Some of these cabs have these TV screens in the back that have different things on them, like you can get your stock quotes and your sports scores and your all these things. Well, what they've done is they've issued these cards to blind people that you swipe in through the slot in the screen for your credit card, and it'll start talking to you, and it'll give you instructions on how to use it, and it'll tell you what the meter's doing and what your fare is going to be like and that sort of thing. So you really know what to expect as a blind person. You can just pay it with your credit card or what have you. And having taken many cabs and probably ripped off by at least one or two cab drivers. By the way, in my life, I've only ever stiffed one cab driver, but he deserved it. Anyway, this is fantastic because really, as a blind person, you can't see the meter. If you're familiar with where you're going, you at least have an idea of where you're going maybe or what route the driver is taking. And maybe if he's sort of driving around the block two or three times to pad the meter or what have you. But in a lot of cases, if you're taking a cab, you don't. There's a lot of trust involved in being a blind person taking a cab. Well, there's a lot of trust involved being a blind person conducting lots of transactions. But so anything that allows you to, shall we say, trust but verify, I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little scary because it's not like they will take advantage of you, but they could.
They can.
That's why, yeah, that's why money reading apps and money reading devices have been so popular. It takes that element of worry. This sounded really cool. I wanted to go to one of those cities and see these things.
Yeah, I would love to.
But as much as they've done, it does sound to me a little like there's some room for improvement. I thought the whole TV thing was interesting, that they were even in the cabs. That was a whole, factor.
Yeah, who knew about it? I didn't know. And the big thing is logistical, I think. Like, how are people going to get these cards? There isn't, thank God, some kind of blind registry in this country where, like, if you're blind, you're on this list of blind people. I mean, I'm good with that. I'm good with there not being a blind registry. I think the closest thing that we've got to that, though, is the NLS roles, but even that's not definitive.
Right.
I really think that a well-thought-out strategy to disseminate information could be put in place. You know, NLS, the consumer organizations, Voc Rehab, eye doctors. I mean, I think that's doable, word of mouth.
Oh, sure.
My main concern with this is, well, there are two. One is, I think it would be really nice if there was a way, and really essential, for these to interface with a Braille display. I can think of two situations where this would be helpful. One is if you are deafblind. The other is, some cabbies do like to play their music,
mm-hmm.
and then you wouldn't be able to hear. The other thing is, I really think that there should be headphones. Again, or, well, not headphones
sure.
provided, but a jack.
Well, a headphone jack, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
that was definitely a glaring omission. And there are two reasons for that I can see. One being privacy for you. The other being, can you imagine being the cab driver having to listen to an audible meter for however long along with whatever, you know.
Yeah. Those were my two concerns.
Yeah.
And I could see some cabbies are fantastic. Some, I think, would like, do you have to turn that on? Don't you trust me?
Mm.
I mean, there's the whole intimidation aspect. Oh, that never works. It's off by $3. And then whose word is right, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I could see some cabbies being really hostile and potentially saying, you know, you don't know where we are, and I do. So if you want to get to where you're going, you're going to turn that noise off. Now, guess who reads too much fiction? But, you know, I think it could happen. And I think that putting in something as simple as an earphone jack would just solve a lot more problems than not having it would create.
Well, and that's not really too far from fiction because, yeah, there are a lot of fantastic people out there. But let's face it, it's not a great paying job. And the people that do that kind of job aren't necessarily the kind of people that, how can I say this diplomatically? Because I hate to stereotype cab drivers or really anyone else, but the fact of the matter is, some of those guys are kind of rough customers.
Well, look at all the access issues we've had, you know?
Yeah. No dog!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there were individuals, now I don't mean companies, but individuals who padded their fares because, well, I had to take the dog and I didn't want to, you know? I just, you know, really, it doesn't even come down, I suppose, to the nature of cabbies. It comes down to the nature of people, and it comes down to if a sighted person looks at that meter, that experience is not intruding at all into that of the cabbie. And so, you know, it would just really be, I think, pretty imperative that our experience not intrude, and then it doesn't go into the, you know, don't you trust me kind of
thing. Yeah, it doesn't turn into a whole power trip deal.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are going to be times when, rather than taking a cab, it would just be better to hire a driver, because that way you know who you're hiring. You can develop a sense of trust with that person. And that leads us nicely into our next story. And Lisa, I believe you've had some experience with this. You want to talk about this a little bit?
I have. Very similar to the author's experience. Stephanie Stevens-Van is a rehabilitation teacher, has been for years. She actually supervised my internship experience, and she's still alive to tell the tale. So she's written a really excellent article about the kinds of things that you want to consider when hiring a driver or when you have a friend drive for you. She talks about when it's all right to have volunteers and when it's all right to, or when it's necessary to hire. She talks a little about keeping yourself safe. I had a very hair-raising experience hiring a, well, not hiring in this case, a potential driver. And so, you know, again, you can't ever be too safe. And it is difficult. You know, there was one thing in her article, though, that I did disagree with. And I say that having all the respect in the world for Stephanie. But a couple times she kind of said, you know, spread yourself thin between a lot of drivers because you don't want to impose on someone too much. Well, I do feel that that's the case with volunteers. She made a really good point. Like, if you know, if you have a friend who likes to shop at a big box store like Sam's or whatever, just ask them, you know, hey, when you're going again, could I go with you? That way you're more conveniently fitting into their schedule. But, you know, I had a situation where when I started work, I worked as a rehab teacher and I went to people's homes. And I found the whole driver thing to be extremely stressful because I had someone who could drive, let's say, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, but not to this county or this county. And so it was the whole game of, wow, okay, do I schedule the clients first and then I find out I don't have a driver? Or do I schedule the driver and they plan their day and then I can't get the clients? So that was really hard, but I had always heard this too, you know, don't use any one driver too much. Mm-hmm. And I ended up hiring someone who I didn't know, I didn't realize at the time, would have been perfectly happy driving full time. And I had this person drive for me maybe once a week, once every other week, because I had this whole core of drivers that was stressing me out. Not that they were, just the scheduling was.
Right.
And she said to me, is there anything that I can do to be, I don't think she said better at this, but something like that. Like, in other words, is there a reason you only have me doing this so often? And I said, yeah, I was told that, you know, I always heard that that's the best way. And she's like, well, you know, honestly, what about just asking? You're so determined, you know, like you in the general sense, you know, we're so determined that we're not going to, you know, like put too much of us on one person, that we're not going to inconvenience them, that we forget to communicate. Mm. This person needed a full-time job.
Wow.
Oh, I needed a full-time driver.
Yeah.
And you know what? If we had just communicated earlier, that would have done amazing things for my stress.
Sure.
But that whole, it really is a fine line. And I think my favorite line in the whole article, and I'm paraphrasing, but she was talking about a conversation with a friend, and she said, if I have the right to ask, you know, to be driven somewhere, if I have the right to ask, then you have the right to say no, or not now, you know, or I can do it. And she talked about other things like, okay, well, you know, if you can't get to the store today, it's not worth stressing about it because you lived without it for this long.
Right.
Talks about being aware of your surroundings, both in interviewing and when you're in the car with someone. So really lots of good information. By the way, this came from our Twitter feed. A lot of the stories we discuss and far more make it through our Twitter feeds. So if you go to sarotalk.com and you look at our podcasts, you can follow the Twitter feeds for our various podcasts. We have one for Sarotalk. We have one for Triple Click Home, for that Android show, and for Sarospectives. And as you know,
you forgot about End of Line.
We like
End of Line. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so dead. Oh, I can hear the eye reports now. Just follow Blue Cheese rules and you'll be good to go, my friends. Anyway, now we know where I stand on that issue.
Yeah. Ranch.
Yeah, it's so, made out of a yeast infection.
Oh, please.
No,
please.
Ranch.
I saw that tweet and I'm like,
blue cheese
need to get
is made
themselves.
Out of a freaking yeast infection. No, thank
then
you.
Long live yeast. Long live yeast. Oh, that's terrible. Anyway, how did we get from there to here? Okay.
You just mentioned EOL and that happens. It's that simple.
Yeah, it does. It does. So, anyway, to follow all of our tweets, you know, just look us up. We'll be happy to have you. One thing in particular that some of you have mentioned on Sarospectives, we like surprises. We were able to get the Mountain Lion special together pretty quickly and therefore were able to post. And the people who saw it first and were able to plan to join us live were following us. And speaking once more of Sarospectives, one of our guests for that was Liam Irvin, and Jamie has some exciting news to share from Liam.
Oh, Liam is releasing you can pre-order his Super Egg Hunt game. Now, this has been a free game for a long time, but it is now a paid game, and there's like 10 levels. And I'm much more excited about Super Egg Hunt Plus than I really should be. Because the premise of this game is that you run around a board, and you try to not be pecked by a chicken, and you collect eggs. And I am not even going to even begin to think how much time I have spent playing that game.
I know. It's like, if I get my paperwork done, you know, or do this or that, I'll play half an hour of Super Egg Hunt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're going to be able to, like, race against the chicken and have unlimited chickens. And if you pick up clocks, you get more time. And apparently there's one mode that you're going to have to avoid the clocks, which is really going to be interesting because you're programmed to pick them up. Yes, thank you, Liam, for creating a game that is so simple but yet so addictive. So,
anyway. Actually, I got quite a chuckle last night. We were getting set up, and he said, you know what? There's like 10 minutes left, isn't there? He said, I haven't fixed myself anything to eat yet. I need to go get something.
Right.
It came out to what he was eating, and he said,
chicken nuggets.
Chicken nuggets. And I'm like, I'm hearing Super Egg Hunt. And that amused me far more than it really should.
That is great.
It's great. I'm like, well, would we expect anything else? Maybe some scrambled eggs on the side, but yeah.
Chicken nuggets and scrambled eggs. You know, that's an interesting combination. Not saying I wouldn't try it. Just saying it's interesting. I don't know.
Reminds me way back in the 80s when there was a quiz at McDonald's, and it was which came first, the chicken or the egg, and you had to choose. And, you know, I would say definitely the chicken, and people would say, why? I said, because I like chicken McNuggets better than egg McMuffins, and that's what you get if you choose the egg.
Uh-huh. Well, on a completely unrelated but yet very interesting note, I think, we've mentioned a couple of times on this podcast MasterChef with Christine Ha, who is the visually impaired.
I really like her.
Contestant. You know, I have not watched that show, and I've got to YouTube it at least.
Yeah, I haven't either, and I should.
I really like her. She's, and I really like the way that they're handling her blindness on the show.
Right. I understand everyone, the judges and everyone, well, some of her fellow contestants apparently aren't very nice, but I suppose that kind of goes with the territory.
Well, you know, it's funny because it started out that way.
Okay.
The one guy that was like the biggest jerk out on the show won one of the challenges, and he got to choose who got which kind of... who got canned crab and who got a live crab. He gives her the live crab. Mm. And one of the other contestants says, what kind of bleep, 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 bleep gives the blind chick the live crab?
Yeah.
See, that's funny because not having watched the show, I would have thought, ooh, that's a coup for her because that's
well, and
quality.
It was. I mean, she was scared to death of the thing, but she nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She totally nailed it. Here's what I really like about what they've done. Yeah, okay, there was a little bit of the violins and stuff, you know, when one or two scenes where they're like, yeah, you can do this stuff. But in general, Christine's blindness has just been like one of those things. It's like, oh, by the way, she's blind. And,
right.
And you know, they've, oh, by the way, mentioned that she has an aide that helps her get her stuff and you know, tells her if her... you know, if she asks, like, you know, is what's the color of this? You know, is this is this browned on the top or what have you? Kinds of things. The aide is not in any way allowed to interfere with what she's doing, and they made that very clear. And they've also made it clear that she's going to be judged by the same criteria as everybody else, and she has been. Mm-hmm. And nobody's made a big deal out of her blindness so much. If anything, it's been like, you know, it's amazing that you can do what you do. You know, you've got an amazing palate. I think that your blindness has been an asset for you because you have to rely more on your sense of taste and so on and so forth. But it's always been about her ability. Always, always has been about her ability, and that's been such a shift from how blind people have been portrayed in any media. I'm thinking of it's not a new thing, it's certainly a newer thing and it's a refreshing thing, but I'm thinking of did any of y'all watch last year that Expedition Impossible?
Part of it. part of
where they had Eric Weimaraner, right. Or Weisenheimer.
That's a dog. Weimaraner. I just Eric.
There we go.
Yes. Eric Weinmeier.
yeah.
On it.
We're sorry, Eric. If you listen to our podcast, we apologize for that.
No, we love Eric. Eric's cool, yes. Man.
Yeah.
But it was the same kind of deal. Mm-hmm. His competitors, some of his competitors were like, I got beat by a blind guy, I can't believe it. But the the guys that came, that went the distance with him, and I mean, I don't mean just his team, but I mean like the Gypsy Brothers, which were the guys that actually ended up winning. The top two, they totally had complete respect for each other. And the six people that are left on MasterChef, it's the same kind of deal.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of deal. Nobody's, people are treating Christine as an equal. The one time this one person had won one of the challenges they're like, well, why are you giving Christine this the salmon? That's an easy fish. And she said, oh, I love Christine. She's awesome, you know. But no, she gets a lot of respect and well deserved. Mm-hmm. And she just deals with her blindness herself as if, and she's not congenitally blind. She's only been blind for about 10 years,
right?
And she's really doing fantastic things. And she's got the right attitude. She's a go-getter. She hasn't let it stand in her way. I think she's a fantastic example, not just for sighted people to see, yeah, blind people are capable and we can do things and we can compete with sighted people in that arena and given the right tools on a level playing field. But she's a fantastic example for us too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just can't say enough good about her.
Right.
Yeah. There's so many, like, blind person in singing competition, blind person on reality show. And it's like, whatever, you know. But as this has gone on, you know, I just find that I'm more interested because they really have, it seems, stressed her as a person. I mean, of course, from a rehab standpoint, I keep thinking I want to watch because I want to hear about the adaptations that she used, that she found worked for her. Because
the funny thing is, they don't go into a lot of that.
When I talked to clients who cooked. Okay, see, I didn't know if they would or not. But, like, something had to interest me more than just, this is a blind person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's doing well, and how other people are responding. That's the thing that will probably make me find it on YouTube and catch up. Which I know takes away from the weekly, you know, yeah. Will she make it? But
right.
Still.
So we'll give a quick shout out to the Department of Assistive and Rehabilitative Services in Houston and also the Lighthouse for the Blind, both in Houston, who've helped her with some skills and that sort of thing. This article does go into a little bit of, I mean, she went blind in 2003 and she worked as a software consultant before she went blind and kind of learned to cook in college, as many people did,
she had to.
For survival, exactly. So some really cool info.
And while she was sighted, she apparently, and
yeah,
you know, she found the whole software thing not fulfilling, and so now she's doing other things. Her website, by the way, theblindcook.com, I had a look at it, and she posted some recipes for like Cornish hens and for other things. Fantastic.
Nice.
Definitely give that a look.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. We'll absolutely do that. Well, Narrator is coming along nicely, apparently, in Windows 8, according to this article that we have up next. And they did listen to some user feedback. People had suggestions. They took those suggestions. And, you know, we had this podcast that got released like the day that the preview of Windows came out and Narrator wasn't quite ready for prime time. And this person kind of said, oh, it's not as good as VoiceOver and it's horrible. And
it's really, you know, quite good.
That's good. I haven't had a chance to play. I don't have a machine with Win 8 on it at all, but I'm glad to hear that. I really am. And it sounds like the touch experience is going to be pretty nice as well.
Yeah, I don't have anything touch enabled, so I can't comment. Right. But yeah, it sounds like it's going to be really good.
Good. Good deal.
I can't either, but doesn't it just amaze you guys that 4 years ago, if we were talking about touch on a computer, this would have been a totally different discussion.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the fact that it's even possible still kind of wows me.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, I mean, no, it wasn't all that long ago that we heard touchscreen and just went screaming in horror and revulsion.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now I still mostly scream in horror and revulsion, but not always.
It's like kudos to Apple and Google and Microsoft. It's like, bring it, because we're going to need more and more of it.
Oh, definitely.
That's where the world's going. That's where things are headed. The more access to touchscreen-enabled devices we can get, the better. Kind of my take on that.
Oh, one thing. I got to say, Christine is a multi-platform girl. She uses Windows with JAWS, and she uses an iPhone.
Yes, absolutely.
And she has some sort of CCTV.
Yep.
So
yep.
She's using all kinds of tools, which is great.
Right.
Yep.
Well, finally, Flexi is out with another update. Lisa, you're the beta tester. Go ahead and tell us kind of what the changes are on this latest release.
I got to buy it.
Go team Flexi. Yes. And well, that you I certainly hope that once you try it, you will.
Mm-hmm.
But now that is one of the big things, is that you can try it and you can type away to your heart's content. And you can see the options to copy it or tweet it, etc. But to have that ability, you will need to purchase. But at least this way you can try it and you can evaluate it. One thing that really was never a big deal to me but seems to be to many is that when you start the app now, you do not have to turn VoiceOver off to type. It is using VoiceOver, and that is kind of nice because it will use the voice of your choosing and the speed of your choosing to relay the information to you.
Yeah, that's
so one less step then.
No, not really.
They've replaced it with another step, right? Yeah.
You have to tap on the keyboard to activate it once, and I find I have to do that and then swipe left to erase that one character.
Oops.
You know, that's okay,
yeah.
But a lot of people, I think, are far happier with that than they are with turning VoiceOver off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that you would turn VoiceOver back on and it would bring up the menu, which I really thought that was kind of a clever thing.
Mm-hmm.
But now what I had a beta where to get into the menu, you triple tapped near the top of the screen, and I didn't like that. I seemed to do fine with two and my brain and my fingers have trouble, obviously, counting to three in rapid succession because I had difficulty. But that's just me. Now what you do is you put your finger on the screen near the top and you hold it. And it will first read what you've typed. And then it will, you can just skip that. You can flick right and skip it and go into the menu. And there are, you know, small under the hood kind of changes. But this is a great app and much improved, and normally if I'm enthusiastic about something, I am for a little while and then I'm good. I get back to normal. But
yeah.
This one, it's like the more I see it and the more I use it, the more I really love it.
It's kind of funny.
Okay,
I use it some.
Apple, if you're listening to this,
mm-hmm.
please license this.
That would be great.
Yeah, well, really, you know, let's say that somebody said, okay, let's say that it was licensed and it was on all the Apple devices, okay? You know what? If you don't want to type, quote, Flexi style, you can still use Flexi to type character by character.
Mm.
So if you don't want your experience to change, it wouldn't have to, but it could. And man, does it ever.
I think it's interesting that they have said that some sighted people actually find it useful.
Yeah, I've talked. I actually sent it to a computer guru friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to get an Android soon. And he's like, man, because he's like, 60-something. He's like, man, I wish this were available for Android. He said, I'm such a fat finger typist. This has me written all over it.
I'm a little surprised they're not talking a little more about porting it over. Joe made the comment that they said they didn't think there was enough of a market yet, but I think they might be surprised.
That may change, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
that's
you
true.
Know, right now there are four people. They're very good. They're very responsive. I've sent feedback to them, and I've always gotten a response within like 12 hours. I see people tweet at them and they're right on it and they're right back. And so, you know, I'm sure that there are a lot of people who would be thrilled if it was on Android, but I do commend them. And even if they had started on Android, you know,
yeah.
I do commend them for sticking to the platform that they're sticking with and really
right.
doing a quality job.
Exactly. All right. Well, definitely check it out. We have a link to Flexi in the show notes as well. Coming up next, we have The Mailbag and Roundabout right here on Saratalk Podcast 119.
Hey, Dad, how do you throw a curveball? How do you build a fort? How do refrigerators run? How do fish learn how to swim?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
How high can you jump?
But you don't have to know every answer.
How many phone numbers are there?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
How do cell phones work?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
What's electricity?
They just need you.
What's the moon made of?
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
And we're back right here on Saratalk Podcast 119. I'm back with Buddy and Lisa this week. And let's open up the mailbag. It's kind of a light one this time. Let's hope it doesn't float away. Maybe we better grab it and bring it back to Earth. We're going to play an iReport from Mary Ellen Earls, and then I'll comment on it just a little bit. So let's hear from Mary Ellen.
Mary Ellen Earls, regarding the video in podcast 117, as a senior citizen, I don't find that even slightly surprising. For the most part, when I grew up, that's the kind of ad that was out there. And, of course, you know, we live in America. It could be that they have a different philosophy. I don't know, but I'm not at all surprised to see such a sticky, sentimental approach to blind people or blindness and a way to get money. It just really doesn't surprise me. You people, most of you have grown up with technology. I did not, and I'm just not surprised at all. And I thoroughly enjoyed the toilet speaker idea. I think it would be kind of funny to have a timed video or a recorder and have every time somebody lifts the toilet lid, a message come out of the toilet. But anyway, keep up the good work and talk to you soon.
Well, thanks, Mary Ellen, for that perspective. I really appreciate that. It's interesting that you are not surprised by the ad at all, that you've seen this. And it's sad, but it doesn't surprise me that this is more pervasive and has been over the years than maybe some of us younger folks might realize. We've had a lot of several good iReports. People enjoying the APH tour, comments on the scratch and sniff menus, which, by the way, that was my wording. That's not really what they're doing. I'm not sure how they're getting the odors on this plastic, but I kind of made up the scratch and sniff part. But anyway, we really appreciate your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Resources at saratalk.com. Leave an iReport on your Android or iOS device on iBlink Radio. You can call the Blab Line at 866-997-2522. Go over to saratalk.com, look at the show notes, and leave a comment on the blog if you'd like. Finally, if you subscribe to us in iTunes, be sure and give us a review and rate us while you're over there. It's time now for Roundabout.
Roundabout.
This first article is not real surprising. NASA says that your smartphone is as smart as the Curiosity rover. I guess it only needs to just do a few things, right, buddy? Just kind of phone home once in a while.
Phone home, send pictures back. It might do some analysis. But, I mean, really, what was it? Like the power of an Atari video game console got us to the moon?
Yeah.
Something like that. So, yeah, not a huge surprise, although it's kind of an interesting perspective that you've got something that powerful in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. When you read the article, it talks a little bit about the need to construct devices or computers and processors that are able to withstand the temperatures that these things must on other planets, and that's kind of interesting. And for some reason, the thing that I found most amusing was that if it comes across terrain that it's not too sure about whether it should try to go there or not, it phones home and kind of asks permission. Should I go here or should I not? So I wouldn't want to be the tech guy at the other end saying, wonder if we should let it do that or not. You know, if it gets stuck, our 2-year mission is kind of down the drain. But If we tell it no, then we're kind of at a dead end. So let's hold our breath and cross our fingers and push the go button here.
And if you think email takes a long time, just bear in mind it's like a like 20 minutes each way, something like that. Like 20 minutes to get the message there, 20 minutes to get the message back. Because, you know, of course, you think that radio is instantaneous, but light still takes time to get there. And so it takes 8 minutes to get from the sun. So it's and it's actually even further to Mars. So you think email's slow, just, you know, little perspective.
Mm, yeah. So when we're colonizing the stars, I'm sure they'll have to work on ways to make the communication a little faster. But by then, we'll be using technology that we don't even know exists today, so I'm sure that will not be as big a problem as it seems. Finally, Lisa, how interested are you in an app that would tell you the mood of someone by their facial expression?
Okay, this was bizarre on so many levels. first of all, let me back up, and those who know me probably will know where I'm going with this. This article was really poorly written, I think, because they started out with one headline, and they ended up talking about two different products.
The headline itself was pretty boring as well. Application helps for iPhone to help the blind. With what?
Yeah, but basically, they're talking about two different technologies. It's a group of engineering students, and one thing they've done is they've designed a belt that can be worn that will tell you objects in your path.
But have you anyone who's seen the Xbox, the Kinect camera? I would not want to be wearing one of those on my waist.
No, and it wouldn't go well with any kind of formal dress.
The thing's huge.
And then they're saying, well, I mean, I'm sorry, there are some formal clothes too where you wouldn't want to wear a belt. You wouldn't want to wear something around your waist.
Right.
And they're saying, well, you know, it can detect obstacles in front of me.
So can my cane.
Yeah, that's called a cane.
So can my guide dog.
You know?
Yeah.
Exactly. But they're saying, you know, it hasn't done ditches and potholes yet. And I'm thinking, oh, so sorry, splat, you know? But what I think was the main thrust of the article was that they had come up with a way to recognize the expressions on people's faces.
Right.
And I don't know. I just have so many thoughts about this. First, one of them being, did you ever actually talk to a blind person and ask if this is something they need?
Oh, the article says they haven't.
No, they actually did not.
No, I know. They haven't tested it on a blind person, but have they even talked to? It's like, you know, in one sense, this makes me angry because it's someone thinking they know what we need.
Right.
In another, it's fascinating because there are so many variables to people's faces. You know, how do you know? And how do you know, you know, like, you walk up to someone and you say, would you please turn around? I need to snap your picture so that my app will tell me what kind of mood you're in.
I have friends that he looks really ticked off.
You know, it's funny because I have friends that like something like that would really creep out.
Yeah.
I would like to play with it, okay? I have no desire to use it. I mean, you can tell voices and stuff. And then there's the whole issue of getting an accurate picture. I'm 4'9". You know, I would be getting responses back like, Stanley's navel is happy today. You know, this, cause, you know, I'm not getting their face, maybe. I just think that there are so many things that are not really wrong, but unnecessary. Again, we're back to putting all these things together to form the fact that there's going to be a longer iPhone screen. They're putting all this together to formulate something that blind people would use.
Right.
And I think in many situations, it would be highly inappropriate. And in others, it would just be completely unnecessary. Now, I think if they broadened their thinking, for example, the one thing that really gave me hope when they were talking about the belt was they said that it might have application for firefighters or soldiers.
Yeah.
This app for the blind, I don't think so. For people with autism, score one, because they can't always interpret the moods, you know, they can't interpret someone's reaction by their face,
right.
But they have the visual ability to take good, clear photographs, and something like this might really help them. So it's very much a mixed bag, I think.
I keep thinking out of the maelstrom of all of these different attempts, something really cool is going to emerge at some point for some population. It may not even be the blind population. It may be firefighters or our autistic individuals. But something really cool is going to come out of the cauldron at some point. So that's one of the reasons I find myself still kind of drawn to some of these stories, as silly as some of them are and as useless as some of this research appears to be. I think it's probably heading somewhere at some point.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is just the lens through which I'm seeing things, but I find that I see far more news stories, iPhone app aims to help the blind, than anything.
Yeah.
And I think it really speaks to society's fear about blindness at large. I mean, I think it's great if an app can actually help, but I do feel like, you know, talk to an actual blind person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to find out, like, okay, for example, Flexi, whose app, from what I can tell, and not just my own personal bias, has been fairly wildly successful.
Yeah.
Why did their app to, quote, help the blind make it when others have fallen flat? And I think part of it is
lots of blind beta testers.
That too. But they identified a need. You know,
they
identified a legitimate need and really thought outside the box or whatever. But then there have been other apps. They've found a legitimate need too, and they just don't make it. And so I wonder what that intangible.
One thing the Flexi team did, though, is they really did come to the blind community. And,
yes,
and they really
yes.
did say, hey, we want to know what you guys think about this. And we are interested enough. We're going to show up at one of your conventions. We're going to talk to you. We're going to let you play with this thing hands on. And we really, truly want to know your thoughts. I think that's a big part of it.
I have found my dealings with them in hearing the audio and communicating with them by email that they've been very, very respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And not that as a blind person, I feel like I'm due more respect than someone else. But, you know, as much. And maybe that's the difference. It's not the patronizing attitude of, you know, it's we're providing a service, not we're trying to help the blind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just much classier.
It's an important distinction.
It is. And, you know, you don't see it. And there are the skeptics who would say, oh, you're splitting hairs. But in this case,
I think
revenues will speak for themselves. You know, it matters. It makes a big difference.
Yep. Very definitely food for thought, as I think I've said earlier in the podcast. We've covered a lot of subjects, and we would really love to hear from you at the end of this podcast. Patrick's going to tell you one more time how to get a hold of us. Be sure and check out our other podcasts here on the Sarah Talk Podcast Network. We have Sarah Spectives. We have End of Line, that Android show, which, of course, deals with all things Android, and Triple Click Home, which deals with all things
High Contrast.
Apple, Mac, and High Contrast, our newest,
yes,
thank you, which deals with low vision issues. And definitely check out all of those podcasts and give us your feedback. We love hearing from you. That is extremely important to us. I'd like to thank Buddy and Lisa for joining me today on the podcast. It's been really great being able to just bounce some ideas off of you too. So thanks.
Yeah, it's been fun.
It has. It's been great. Thank you.
So until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Saratalk. Visit us at www.saratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@saratalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.